Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's 12:03 on Wednesday afternoon, October 23rd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Vintage electronics, including flip phones, Polaroid cameras, and Sony Walkmans are making a comeback. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the report on September home sales leads today's data. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And I think this report on home sales in September really hammers home the idea that you can't just flip a switch and turn the housing market back on.
That's right. I mean, we have seen lower mortgage rates, but not enough to get people to move. We saw existing home sales down about 1% for the month. That included a 0.6% decline for single family sales, but a much larger decline of about 5% for condos and co-ops. So people still are reluctant to move, given that they'd be trading, you know, a mortgage rate of 3.5% for something closer to 6.5%.
And even with the Fed cutting interest rates by half a percentage point about a month ago, the bond market has basically wiped out a lot of those gains that new home buyers or mortgage applicants could see.
That's right. I mean, we've seen, you know, mortgage rates are still at around 6.5%. They respond more slowly to Fed funds rate cuts because there are other factors that figure into mortgage rates, in particular inflation and economic growth. So until we see mortgage rates move a little lower, which I do think will happen later this year, I think the housing market is going to be stuck in neutral.
And how long is that going to take? I mean, is it going to require another maybe full percentage point worth of interest rate cuts to get that market moving once again? Or is it going to be some sort of external event? Because eventually the dam is going to break in one way or another.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a combination of things. I think we'll see the Fed cut twice later this year. That'll bring the Fed funds rate down by a half of a percentage point. That will help. And then we also are starting to see more inventory on the market. So with sales slowing, more homes are for sale. That means that will help put downward pressure on prices. So I think affordability is going to be better by the end of the year. So I think we'll see a pickup in sales in early 2025, and then it will continue throughout the rest of next year.
We're talking about the September home sales report with Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Now, what does this mean for existing homeowners who may be using their home equity to finance projects, either in the form of a home equity loan or maybe a HELOC? Housing prices are considerably higher today compared to where they were in 2019 or early 2020. But what's going to happen to people who are sitting on top of a lot of home equity once the housing market starts to move?
Well, you know, I mean, I think we'll see slower price growth. I don't think we're going to see big outright price declines. You know, rates should come down, and so that should make it more attractive to get a home equity loan. So I think the outlook is still pretty solid there, and I think that the lower rates are going to probably outweigh any impact from slower price growth. So I think that homeowners should be able to use that home equity for borrowing needs.
So the bottom line is, if you are sitting there and looking at the appraisal value of a home that you've been in a long time and maybe smiling about what it has done to your net worth, those gains aren't going to go away. Those are yours, and you're going to keep them.
I think you're going to keep most, if not all, of those gains, and even, you know, see modest price growth going forward, just not at the pace of what we've seen for the past few years.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, it's time to dig up your VCR and your Walkman and use them.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The hit movie Alien Romulus, coming to VHS as a limited edition release on December 3rd. You heard that correctly. It's coming to VHS. Let's get an update on the reemergence of retro electronics from Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And I cannot tell you, I can't describe to you, Paul, the warm feelings of nostalgia that I felt yesterday when I saw the Alien Romulus VHS box. I felt like I was at the video store 30 years ago coming across that. But I have not watched a movie on video cassette in maybe 10 years, if not more. But this is part of a larger trend, Paul, towards freeing yourself from the algorithm that a lot of people are embracing retro tech in order to undergo a digital detox.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you used the word update. It's really more of a back date. You know what I mean? It's like there is the nostalgia, I think, and it's exactly the right word, but the nostalgia is more than just sort of, isn't that cute? I remember that. The nostalgia in some ways is like sort of a mass move away from the speed, the confusion, the chaos, and everything else that we get when we get extremely fast digital stuff. And so I will say that, you know, so I make videos for a living. I make very short ones, but the VHS, by the way, was not a paragon of great technology. It worked. Beta lost. I don't know if anybody remembers Beta, but Beta tape is the broadcast standard for a long time for TV stations. But VHS is coming out, and the resolution's kind of junky. But I mean, by comparison to say Blu-ray, which, by the way, your producer Andy Gersher was noting that some Blu-rays out there are getting hundreds of dollars, and Blu-ray is also a retro technology. So everywhere you look, there is a bit of a backlash against all this digital speed and efficiency, and people are attracted to representations of all that analog stuff that was in our past.
Well, I was going to say, one of my really good friends is a big movie guy, and he is a DVD evangelist. And this leads to another issue in the digital age, is that if you have physical media, you are no longer victim to whatever streaming service to which you may subscribe, pulling your favorite movies off and giving them to another streaming service which you don't have access to. So if you have all of your movies on DVD, they're yours, and they're not going anywhere unless you sell them.
No, that's true. On the other hand, good luck playing them, because for many people, as they went forward and, you know, boldly into this new digital age where everything could be streamed and nothing had to be held at home, as you were just referring to, well, if you didn't hold on to your Blu-ray player, good luck getting one, and or a CD that had a lot of your favorite music on it. You probably remember those, and you could put it in your car. Well, no car manufacturer is putting a CD player in cars anymore, and certainly not cassette players. And guess what? Cassettes are now 400 to 500% more expensive than they were when they were coming out before, partly because they're rare. But again, good luck. You need a player. So now, look, protectors of the obsolete is what one of the sort of retailers said for they basically retail very old technology. Well, that's true, but that you really have to hold on to both the player and the media in order to enjoy it.
We're talking about retro tech with Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Paul, you and I could talk all day about our own VHS stories. I mean, I have several boxes of audio cassettes in my basement featuring the first 5 or 6 years of my radio work. And quite frankly, someone should set fire to it as a public service. But I think it brings to a larger point, and that is all this stuff is centralized in your phone, and there are people who believe that just staring at your phone and scrolling through social media has a serious effect on your mental health. And if you decentralize the entertainment component from it, if you have your music on CD or on cassette, if you have physical media, DVDs, if you have all of this other stuff around, you don't have to look at your phone to get to it.
That, you know, by the way, that's an excellent point. And it's been made by a lot of people who are, I don't know if it was made as quickly as you just did, but it's absolutely correct. And namely, people are getting tired of being hunched. There's literally mental health issues, as you mentioned. There's also physical health where you're hunched over. It's bad for your posture. People with back issues are in some cases pointing to their phone use as a reason. But there are phones, to use phones as an example, flip phones are now hip. Flip phones, which are, they're dumb phones, some people call them. And dumb or slow phones and flip phones are all in reaction to all that speed. And guess what? To your point, if you decentralize all that media, and not to get overly serious about this, but in some ways you might spend time with human beings, which, by the way, I think is a plus. So flip phones don't let you browse because all they can do is make calls and text. And all kinds of other technologies are in some ways, again, a reaction to this hyperspeed that we're all now living at. And in some ways, this kind of relaxes. I will end this by just saying I have an analog watch with, you may or may not remember, hands, like a big hand and a little hand, and my kids find them stupefying. So anyway, I think it's a good move. I think it's an understandable one, and I look forward to watching Alien Romulus on VHS with you.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a last will and testament is a necessity if you want to save your survivors from major headaches.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. One of the most thoughtful things you can do for your family is having a last will and testament. Let's discuss the reasons you should do so with Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online at preparemyretirement.com. Shane, thank you for joining us today. And every couple of years, Shane, there's always a story about a celebrity passing away, and then you find out the celebrity didn't have a will. And then all of a sudden, relatives and friends and all sorts of people come out of the woodwork claiming to have a piece of this performer's estate, leading to a long and painful legal process. I mean, the one that really comes to mind is Aretha Franklin. But if you, as a non-celebrity, pass away without a will, what type of legal Donnybrook are you leaving to your heirs?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you said Aretha Franklin. Prince is another one that comes to mind, but it leaves a lot of headaches. And so what happens, and then by the way, I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on TV. But that being said, if you don't have a will, if you don't have an estate plan, there's something called intestacy, or someone died intestate. And what that means is that they've passed away without their own plan. And so what happens is the state basically decides for you. There's more to it than that, but I don't know about you. I don't know that I want the state of Illinois deciding who gets what and when and how much. And it's most likely not going to be exactly how I wanted it. It's going to take a lot more time. You know, when you're going through that process, it can take 9 months to a year, or in some of these other cases, much, much more than that, along with a lot of money and a lot of legal fees for heirs.
And it's also remarkably easy to set up an appointment with a wills and trusts attorney and come out with a document that just says what goes where and when if you were to pass away in an untimely manner. I know in my case, our wills and trusts attorney was a family friend, and it was my wife and I in a conference room for an hour and a half just talking about where do the kids go, who is the executor of the estate, who gets what, you know, gets personal possessions and things like that. And it's, you know, kind of an interesting conversation. Then you're done. And then you file it away.
Exactly, Rob. And a lot of people, they get nervous about it. I mean, nobody likes to think about death, and it's morbid, which is understandable. People want to think positively. They don't like to address things that are negative. But that being said, it is something, it's not as painful as people think. It's not as expensive as people think, especially if you're looking at just doing a will. It's an evolving thing. So a lot of people, they really get hung up on, not only is it not fun to talk about, but I'm making a decision that's permanent. And it's really not permanent. You're not supposed to just get that will and keep it for 20 years. You're supposed to get it and then also adjust it over time. You know, every 5 years or so, 10 years or so, or if there's a major life event that happens, maybe you get married, maybe you get divorced, maybe you have a large increase in assets, maybe there are relationships with family members that are different from what they were previously, one way or the other. So all of those are reasons why you might want to get it updated. And you'll likely want to get your will updated every 5 to 10 years.
And for the sake of positivity, Shane, let's assume that we're changing the will because we struck it rich. we found some crude while shooting for some food. Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online, preparemyretirement.com.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The cold case murder of a young woman in Illinois 5 decades ago has now been linked to a suspected serial killer. Early voters coming out in force for the November election. It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Individuals dealing with cognitive decline are at high risk for financial exploitation, and a piece of baseball history sells for a record-setting price. WBBM Business. The markets are lower. The Dow is down 459 points. The NASDAQ is down 327. The S&P 500 down 64. We have 60 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. Police in the western suburbs are announcing a break in a decades-old cold murder case. The body of Kathy Halley was discovered in April of 1979 in the Fox River south of the I-88 bridge in North Aurora. She had been missing for just under a month. Investigators say DNA evidence points to a suspected serial killer, Bruce Lindahl, also linked to at least a dozen murders in the 1970s and early 80s. Lindahl died in 1981 at the age of 28. Police believe he accidentally stabbed himself while murdering another man. Millions of early votes have been cast in the November election. CBS's Jared Hill is on the campaign trail.
We're going to win North Carolina.
Former President Donald Trump was back in the Tar Heel State Tuesday for the second day in a row, slamming Vice President Kamala Harris.
She's totally unfit for office.
And the retired generals who served in his administration.
What a stupid group of people they were. Mattis, Milley.
An article published by The Atlantic yesterday claimed that during a private conversation while in office, Trump said, quote, "I need the kind of generals Hitler had, people who were totally loyal to him," which the Trump campaign has denied.
The former president will be in Georgia today while Vice President Harris has a rally in Pennsylvania. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital in Chicago. Jack, thank you for joining us today. Markets are now down roughly 1%. The NASDAQ is down close to 2%. What is driving today's selling activity?
I think it's higher yields. This is really what's been driving selling activity now for the last 3 or 4 days, actually. We've seen that 10-year Treasury yield march steadily higher to well over the 420 mark now.
And what is driving this surge into the bond market? It's been going on ever since the Fed announced the interest rate cut a half a point a month ago. And what is driving this activity inside the bond market for the past month? Was it just simply the interest rate cut?
It could be potentially the interest rate cut. It could be, increasingly investors believe that we're cutting into an expansion, which historically has actually been good news for equities. It could be that some investors talking about a replay of 1995 when the 10-year yield just went up pretty dramatically in anticipation back in the mid 90s of higher productivity from the internet. This could be a similar phenomenon where perhaps investors are expecting higher productivity from AI.
And then looking at some individual stocks today, the big one, of course, locally based McDonald's, their shares falling after the CDC says an E. coli outbreak was linked to quarter pounders. Now, McDonald's is not the first food company to deal with some sort of contamination issue, nor will it be the last. And how do these things usually play out as far as a publicly traded company's stock is concerned when they're in the middle of this type of crisis?
Generally, obviously it is a crisis and there's the human tragedy that goes along with it. But I think longer term, this is probably would be considered a near term speed bump. And probably history suggests it's really more of a buying opportunity than it is a reason to sell the stock.
And then staying inside the food service space, Coca-Cola, their earnings topped estimates because higher prices offset sluggish demand. What is the demand side of that equation telling us?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it in a lot of food service businesses, not just Coke, but also Starbucks and other places as well, is that, you know, these higher prices are now starting to weigh on consumers. They are still spending, they are still going out, but they're just not spending at these restaurants at the same rate they were. I mean, think about, you know, Coke fuels a lot of the fast food business, and we just talked about McDonald's. You know, they had to promote a $5 special meal plan to be able to attract would-be diners. So there's still a lot of competition going on there, but overall the volumes are down.
Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer with Crescent Capital in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next on Personal Finance Wednesday, protecting people with cognitive decline from financial exploitation.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. In this segment, we're discussing the money challenges faced by people dealing with a decline in their mental acuity. Let's get some help from Carolyn McClain, founder of Life Planning Partners in Jacksonville, Florida. Carolyn, thank you for joining us today. And this is a particularly well-timed segment, Carolyn, because yesterday there was a story that came out from CNN detailing how a number of scammy political action fundraising committees on both sides of the aisle have raised millions of dollars by taking advantage of the elderly and people who do not have complete control over their mental faculties. And they have stories about how their children were trying to claw back hundreds of thousands of dollars in refunds to make sure that their parent or loved one had some of their hard-earned money. But this seems to be a thing that is a real danger for a lot of people, because fundraising is so much easier today than it was maybe 20 years ago.
No, you're exactly right. You know, I'm a physician and a financial planner, and one of the areas where I specialize is in working with elderly adults with cognitive decline. And financial acuity is one of the first things to go long before somebody even recognizes that their parent is having problems. You know, people have a hard time tracking their accounts, tracking what's going through on their credit card, and it's so easily to be swindled and you don't even know it.
And in this particular situation, because in the story, the political fundraising story, it was a lot of text messages with links to donate, promises of access to a candidate or thought leader in a cause that you believed in. And then this person would automatically set up donations, and the donations would just grow larger and larger and larger over time, just because of the recurring charges. Is there a way, as a caregiver or a particularly proactive parent, to make sure that someone is given all the passwords and given your phone number, just so they can keep track of this stuff along with you?
Yeah, so what we do is, when people start hitting your 60s, your risk of dementia doubles every 5 years. So we actually make families have conversations when everybody's well, so late 50s, early 60s, about when financial monitoring is going to occur. And so you can either use like a separate portal like Quicken or something like that, that the children can actually check in every now and then and make sure, or that whoever the financial surrogate's going to be, to make sure that their parent or their elder loved one isn't doing something that they don't know that they're doing. And so to catch it early, so that monitoring needs to occur long before you think you even need monitoring.
And on top, at the same time, though, even though it is very practical and could potentially save you hundreds of thousands of dollars in the long run, that's a very difficult conversation to have. As the person broaching that conversation and the person hearing that message, you may be insulted if someone says, I think we need to have another set of eyes on your finances, just in case you start making all sorts of suspicious transactions. So is there a diplomatic way to go about it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that is one reason why we make people start having these conversations long before a problem ever occurs, when people are well. And it's behavioral psychology. If you plant the seed in somebody's brain that, hey, at some point we may need to be watching behind you, and then you talk about it every couple of years, how are you doing? And, you know, have somebody, have the child look through the finances with the person, because you can become acutely ill too. People think about cognitive decline, but let's say somebody gets cancer or has a stroke, it's good for whoever's going to be watching out for that older adult to start early and then to have financial transparency when they're well. And so that so when those things start to happen, the person doesn't get as defensive because we've already talked about it.
And it's also more important in this context to present yourself as a partner or a helping hand and not someone who's trying to take control of your finances and potentially take your money.
Oh, absolutely. That's why it needs to be collaborative, transparent, and, you know, do smart things from the beginning. Simplify accounts so you don't have to have a lot that needs to be looked at. Freeze your credit so people can't go opening new credit in your name. There's just so many things the elderly can do to start to protect themselves that will give them control longer and make it easier for them to maintain control of their finances without other people having to look in as often.
Carolyn McClanahan, founder of Life Planning Partners in Jacksonville, thank you very much for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, an update on that historic Ohtani home run ball.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
An historic baseball is sold at auction for a record price, despite a dispute over who is the true owner. Let's discuss the multi-million dollar Ohtani ball with Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics, the world's largest dealer and auction house for vintage comic books in New York. Stephen, thank you for joining us today. And the last time we talked about this ball, when it was going on the market the day after that home run was hit in Miami, you were skeptical about the idea that this would actually fetch an eye-popping price at auction. And yet, that 50-50 ball from Miami was sold for $4.4 million. So clearly, there was some demand.
Yes, I stand corrected. My feeling was and is that these were bidders from Japan. And I think that they saw this as a symbol of Japan in American baseball. And I have a feeling that at least a lot of the interest probably came from that arena. I'm not sure in 50 years how this ball will rank in terms of other important pieces of memorabilia, but for today it's done very well. I'm not sure what the courts are going to say. I think this will be a lot of interesting back and forth, and there's a lot of money on the table, which creates an extra motivation for lots of lawyers to join the fray.
Now, we have the World Series starting later this week, and it's a golden opportunity for potential collector's items to be created, depending on what happens inside the games and what big moments take place. I mean, for example, the home run ball that Juan Soto hit on Saturday night, the game-winning home run in Cleveland that sent the Yankees to the World Series. Assuming that ball hits the collector's market, would that be a seven-figure item?
I don't believe so. There are so many wonderful balls that get hit out of the park and are obviously treasured by the people who get them. But very few balls have this sort of international appeal that this particular ball had. To me, the most important would be the home run record. You know, the American League and National League home run records. Currently, it's 62 if you take out steroids. It's obviously much higher than that if you include steroids. So where this is all going to pan out in the end, it's very hard to tell. But people should go to the ballpark and get their piece of memorabilia without thinking about financial components and worth, and just enjoy the sport.
Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics in New York, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to the stream, skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.